Blog Talk Radio.
Change will not come if we wait for some other person or if we wait for some other time. We are the ones we've been waiting for.
The world sees it rise with a gay the world. Now in the morning I sleep alone. Sweep the streets I used to own.
We cannot continue to rely only on our military in order to achieve the national security objectives that we've set. We've got to have a civilian national security force that's just as powerful, just as strong, just as well funded.
fail. To follow, not lead. To suffer, not prosper. To despair, not dream. I'd start with energy. I'd cut off America's supply of cheap, abundant energy. I couldn't take it by force. So I'd make Americans feel guilty about using the energy that heats their homes, fuels their cars, runs their businesses, and powers their economy. I'd make cheap energy expensive, so that expensive energy would seem cheap. I would empower unelected bureaucrats to all but outlaw America's most abundant sources of energy. After banning its use in America, I'd make it illegal for American companies to ship it overseas. If I wanted America to fail, I'd use their schools to teach one generation of Americans that their factories and their cars will cause a new ice age, and I'd muster a straight face so I could teach the next generation that they're causing global warming. When it's cold out, I'd call it climate change instead. I'd imply that America's cities and factories could run on wind power and wishes. I'd teach children how to ignore the hypocrisy of condemning logging, mining, and farming while having roofs over their heads, heat in their homes, and food on their tables. I would never teach children that the free market is the only force in human history to uplift the poor, establish the middle class, and create lasting prosperity. Instead, I'd demonize prosperity itself so that they will not miss what they will never have. If I wanted America to fail, I would create countless new regulations and seldom cancel old ones. That would be so complicated that only bureaucrats, lawyers, and lobbyists could understand them. That way small businesses with big ideas wouldn't stand a chance. And I would never have to worry about another Thomas Edison, Henry Ford, or Steve Jobs. I would ridicule as flat earthers those who urge them to lower energy costs by increasing supply. And when the evangelists of common sense try to remind people about the laws of supply and demand, I'd enlist a sympathetic media to drown them out. If I wanted America to fail, I would empower unaccountable bureaucracies seated in a distant capital to bully Americans out of their dreams and their property rights. I'd send federal agents to raid guitar factories for using the wrong kind of wood. I'd force homeowners to tear down their own homes built on their own land. I'd make it almost impossible for farmers to farm, miners to mine, loggers to log, and builders to build. Because I don't believe in free markets, I'd invent false ones. I'd devise fictitious products like carbon credits and trade them in imaginary markets. I'd convince people that this would create jobs and be good for the economy. If I wanted America to fail, for every concern, I'd invent a crisis. And for every crisis, I'd invent a cause, like shutting down entire industries and killing tens of thousands of jobs in the name of saving spotted owls. And when everyone learned the stunning irony that the owls were victims of their larger cousins and not people, it would already be decades too late. If I wanted America to fail, I'd make it easier to stop commerce than to start it, easier to kill jobs than create them, more fashionable to invent success than to seek it. When industries seek to create jobs, I'd file lawsuits to stop them, and then I'd make taxpayers pay for my lawyers. If I wanted America to fail, I would transform the environmental agenda from a document of conservation to an economic suicide pact. I would concede entire industries to our economic rivals by imposing regulations that cost trillions. I would celebrate those who preach environmental austerity in public while indulging a lavish lifestyle in private. I convince Americans that Europe has it right and that America has it wrong. If I wanted America to fail, I would prey on the goodness and the decency of ordinary Americans. I would only need to convince them that all of this is for the greater good. If I wanted America to fail, I suppose I wouldn't change a thing.
Well, who do you think he's talking about? Who could he possibly be referring to? What administration is he referring to? I have no idea. Anybody? Well, Welcome to another fun-filled and informative hour of the C. Robert Jones Situation Report. I'm your host, Dr. C. Robert Jones, broadcasting from my palatial villa overlooking the beautiful Potomac. Just across the way, I can see the famous Watergate Hotel. It's a beautiful night here in Alexandria, United States of America, planet Earth, third planet from the sun. The call-in number is 347-884-8500. Who, pray tell, is that video we just heard referring to? Who? Are we a nation of looters? As in Ayn Rand? A nation of moochers? A nation of debtors? What are we? What have we come to? I know these are the age-old questions, and you've been asking Dr. C. Robert Jones. You said, Doc, what's going on? What's going on with the world? What's happened to us? We used to be self-reliant. We used to be proud. Back when Ronald Reagan was president, well, you've heard it all before. You've played by the rules. You've worked hard to put yourself through school. You've gotten a decent job, and you've paid your taxes. You're faithfully paying down your mortgage and saving money in perhaps a 401k. All to secure your finances and your future. But now there are a lot more takers than makers. And the impact is systemic and long-lasting. A prevalent new moocher culture is changing the character of this nation. That's the core message of a nation of moochers and the Occupy movement. America's addiction to getting something for nothing. Now, a new book out by Charles J. Sykes, senior fellow at the Wisconsin Policy Research Institute and the author of six previous books, states that, and I quote, "This has been the flashpoint in American politics for the last several years." Quote, in the wake of the Great Recession, we've shifted from a culture of celebrating and encouraging those who are productive and hardworking to a culture where handouts, bailouts, freebies, and entitlements dominate. You start to wonder, why am I paying the freight for those who have been reckless and irresponsible? Whether it's on Wall Street, in Washington, or anywhere else in the community. I think we're becoming a very different nation from the way we were. We're a nation of moochers. We want something for nothing. A lot of us do. Something for nothing. Take a listen to my guy, John Stossel, and his expose about freeloaders. Remember, you're listening to the C. Robert Jones Situation Report. Your host here, me, your humble host, Dr. C. Robert Jones. If you have an issue with moochers, if you have an issue with the me society, what's in it for me, where's mine? I have a right to a house. I have a right to a car. I have a right to free health care, a human right. I have a human right to have a home. I have a human right to have all of these things. Scattered pictures of the times we left behind. Misty watered, colored memories of the way we were. Oh, yeah. Can it be that it was all so simple then? Or has time rewritten every line? And if we had the chance to do it all again, tell me, would we? Hell, could we? Well, take a listen to John. Let him tell you about it.
Little help? Just a little? I just really rely on the generosity of others.
They have the most deep-seated sense of entitlement that I've ever come across.
Has America become a nation of freeloaders?
It's just an easy way to get money, fast money.
But this freeloading is just small time. There's bigger money in getting government to help you freeload.
They need to start writing checks.
So Congress will now give $50,000 to any black American who says he attempted to farm.
Attempted to farm could mean anything.
The foreclosure crisis. We're told banks are the bad guys. They took homes from innocents. But this woman hasn't paid her mortgage for 25 years. She says she doesn't have to. And these guys' website encourages people not to pay.
Sounds like a scam, but this is true.
That's not a scam at all. It's completely legal. And
you guys are disgusting. You're helping people freeload.
Politicians love doing that.
You can help your girlfriend. You can help your girlfriend's mama.
And everyone will applaud you because
everybody thinks the government owes them something.
Some American Indians are rich, but others stay poor, feeding off government.
Socialists like you have convinced them to
I'm
do that.
Socialist
but
now.
They
well,
do better without the government.
If I'm a socialist, what does that make you?
I thought I was a capitalist, but I'm a freeloader too. You helped me pay for my beach house. Bon Jovi, Ted Turner, Bruce Springsteen, and CEOs like Jeffrey Immelt are freeloaders too. We'll call them on it.
You're a freeloader.
America, a nation of freeloaders. In cities, you often see people like this guy. Desperate-looking people often holding signs like this one. It's natural to want to help people like this man or this woman begging by a road in Salt Lake City. Her sign says she's stranded, in need of help, trying to get home. When drivers stop, she tells them,
I'm from Seattle. I came down here to live with my boyfriend, and he ended up kicking me out a week before Christmas.
You got nothing then?
No, just my backpack.
She tells this reporter from KUTV she's 1,000 miles from home.
It's hard to eat. It's hard to have a place to stay.
But then the cameraman quietly followed her and found she actually lives just 2 blocks away in this house. In the morning, she'd go shopping with a nice coat and purse, and then in the afternoon, she changed clothes and walked 2 blocks to the highway off-ramp and took out her sign. People gave her money.
About $3, $5.
Doing the math shows she made more than $50 an hour.
I just felt sorry for her. A girl out there like that.
I gave her a couple dollars.
She lives in a house. What do you think about that?
That is crazy. I live in a trailer. Dude, people pull over. I don't say anything to anybody. I hold this sign. I don't make anybody give me money.
It is true that she doesn't make anyone give her money, but lots of people want to help those who seem to be in need.
I got it.
But lots of America's beggars are not needy. They're just freeloaders who've found a good racket. When I first reported on freeloading, I wondered, would these people holding will work for food signs really work for food?
I just can't work for anybody.
Would he flip burgers at Burger King?
I wouldn't do it. It's a monotonous job.
Maybe construction.
I can't do it. My back.
He says he would do janitorial work.
That I would do.
But will he do it 5 days a week?
That I can't do.
Why not?
Well, why should I? Why does a human have to work every day if he don't want to?
I have lawn work.
Do you? Do you have some right now?
I offered jobs to 12 people who said they'd work for food. All 12 said they'd come, but only this man did. He did the work, and we paid him $20, but he might have made more money begging.
There have been estimates that earning $100 a day panhandling is easy.
Steve Malanga and Heather McDonald write for City Journal, a magazine about urban policy. They say beggars today are hustlers.
But there must be a lot of them who are genuinely homeless or mentally ill,
desperate people.
Well, every big city has food kitchens galore. The reason that people are on...
All right, we're back with the C. Robert Jones Situation Report, and welcome back. You know, I lived in South Florida for about 10 years. From 1989, from 1989 to 1998, and the Miami Herald once did an expose, an undercover investigative report on panhandling on the off ramps on 95, just before the exit to get off from downtown Miami. There was one person who would stand out every single day, Monday through Friday, morning to afternoon. It was discovered that one could make $40,000 a year just standing out on the off-ramp at the exit to downtown Miami and holding up a sign. In fact, the investigative reporter did just that. He averaged that he made just about $20,000 over the course of, well, about 5.5 months. Now, we are generous people. We want to help. We want to be helpful. But therein lies our dilemma. I saw an individual who said that they needed something to eat. They had a sign saying, I need something to eat. I said, well, hey, I'll go get you something. I'll go get you some chow and I'll bring it back to you. The guy stood there at the off ramp arguing with me, saying that he would prefer to have the money so he could get what he wanted to eat. So I played along. I said, well, what do you want? I'll go get it. I'll go get it and bring it back for you. No problem. I don't have anything else to do the rest of the day. I'll go get some. He would hear none of it. He wanted the money. Americans pride themselves on being a self-reliant people. We know that the freedom to make our own fortune sets us apart from the people in many other nations. I've cited numerous times the Cabbage Patch Dolls, the Beanie Babies, the Mrs. Fields Cookies, the Pet Rock, all started by people who started these crazy businesses out of their houses, out of their kitchens. Now some of the richest people in the Fortune 500. Where else in America can you do that? But with each passing year, this portrait of American self-reliance is eroding more and more and more. We're evolving into a nation of takers, not givers. The numbers in question come in the form of a New Heritage Foundation report, the 2012 Index of Dependence on Government. Now, you don't have to read far before you realize that the days of Horatio Alger stories are far behind us. Start with the most basic fact, one being that more than 67.3 million Americans rely on assistance from Washington for everything from food, shelter, and clothing to college tuition and health care. These benefits cost federal taxpayers roughly $2.5 trillion annually. Staggering. Now, about those taxpayers, even as the number of Americans receiving federal aid rises, the number of federal taxpayers continues to drop. Nearly half of all Americans, 49.5%, don't pay any federal income taxes at all. Now, if that strikes you as an equation that will spell trouble down the road, then you'll have a better grasp of the problem than many politicians have right now. No doubt, America is in serious trouble. No one wants to do anything about it. The President of the United States says that we shouldn't be on our own. that Republicans want you to fend for yourself. That Republicans want you to play by your own rules. Let me ask you something. Isn't that what America's always been about? Isn't that one of the things that made America great? Fending for ourselves. Doing things our way. Within the confines of the law and most reasonable regulations. Fending for ourselves. We have a president who continuously batters us and badgers us into saying that success, although richly earned and rightly so and honestly earned, is good. But because you live in a country where you've been blessed with the ability to earn vast sums of money, you also must return some of that money and give it to the government so the government can redistribute it to whomever it sees fit. So, in essence, you're being punished for being successful. If you make, or I make, $50 an hour, then we should by right give 10 to 15% of that money to the government so that they can redistribute it, perhaps even more. Some of us are forced to give half of our earnings to the government. It's not fair. So let me ask you this. The call in number is 347-884-8500. What would happen if the producers of this great nation went on strike? If we just stopped producing? Now, arguably, there's really no place else to go. France has just elected a socialist president who intends to tax and tax and tax. He's already said so. Tax the wealthy. So what's happening right now is the wealthy in France are leaving France and taking what they have with them. A mass exodus is occurring in France. So pretty much now France is going to wind up being broke. The monetary infrastructure is going to collapse. France is going to start printing money hand over fist. And it's going to be like pre-war World War II Germany, where in order to get yourself a croissant, you're going to have a stack of cash in the tens of thousands of dollars. Oh, and don't want any cheese and wine to go along with that croissant, because you're going to have a wheelbarrow to get that kind of chow. But France has elected this socialist president because Sarkozy was saying, hey, we can afford to keep giving you stuff for free without you earning it, without working for it. We can't afford it. Well, the population in France has become so accustomed to getting their free stuff that they said, oh, hell no. This guy's gone too far. He's got to go. We need our free stuff. And we're going to put someone in office who's going to give us our stuff for free, for nothing, for doing absolutely nothing. And that's why Sarkozy's out and the socialist is in. But what happens when there is no more money? What happens when France runs out of money? People who produce. Right now, this socialist president of France is saying that he's going to tax businesses and rich folks 75% of their earnings. You think they're going to stick around? I don't think so. Do you think they're going to hang out and allow this to happen? Nope. They're not going to do that. They're going to leave. A la Ayn Rand. That's what's going to happen. So I want you to think about that for a minute. And then if you have any questions, call in. We'll talk about it. You're listening to the C. Robert Jones Situation Report. Can this same thing happen here in the United States of America? Can this happen here? Folks, do you remember America? Hope. Hope isn't hiring. We'll be right back. You're listening to the C. Robert Jones Situation Report.
Why is Ayn Rand's great novel Atlas Shrugged a bestseller today, more than half a century after it was written? It's because our real world today is just like the fictional future that Rand foresaw in Atlas Shrugged. It's a time of crisis and decay, but it's also a world of innovation and achievement. It's a world of heroes and villains, driven by very different philosophies. We wrote I Am John Galt to tell their stories. We look at the heroic innovators who are building our world and show that they're doing it just like the heroes of Ayn Rand's novels. They're using her philosophy of capitalism, reason, objective reality, and self-interest. Who is John Galt? Meet John Allison, the mild-mannered Southerner who created one of America's greatest banking empires. He did it with Ayn Rand's philosophy by getting every one of his tens of thousands of employees to read Atlas Shrugged and live by its code. In the great financial crisis of 2008, his bank was about the only one that didn't need a government bailout. But the government forced Allison to take TARP money anyway. After that, Allison walked away, just like John Galt did. There's so many other Rand heroes in our midst. There's Bill Gates, the genius who built the world's greatest company and the world's greatest personal fortune, only to have his own government call him a criminal for succeeding too much. Isn't he just like Hank Reardon from Atlas Shrugged? And how about Steve Jobs, the brilliant entrepreneur who reinvented computers, movies, music, telephones, just because he thought it was so cool? He's got the same attitude toward life as Howard Roark from Rand's other great novel, The Fountainhead. Build it? I don't care if they come. You'll meet some real-life Rand villains in our book, too, the parasites who are trying to destroy the world. Remember Wesley Mooch from Atlas Shrugged, the corrupt bureaucrat who destroyed the economy? That's Congressman Barney Frank, who spent years subsidizing Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac in the name of altruism. When Fannie and Freddie nearly wrecked the U.S. housing market, what did Frank do? Just like Mooch, he demanded wider powers. And you'll meet Paul Krugman, the rabid partisan pundit who spreads socialism from the pages of the New York Times and thinks nothing of using the power of the press to destroy his political enemies. He's Ellsworth Toohey, the scheming, dwarfish newspaper columnist straight from the pages of The Fountainhead. These are some of the heroes and villains who move our world. So who is John Galt? I am. You can be too. Read our book and find out how.
Ms. Rand, do you have any comment to make about the prophecy that was made in Atlas Shrugged?
Only that I'm sorry it's coming true so exactly.
If Rand was here today, she would point to almost anything that's going on in government right now and say, I told you so.
A devastated economy caused by government intervention, leading to more and more and more government intervention, which makes it worse and worse and worse.
What if all the brilliant creative people, the brilliant engineers, the brilliant inventors decided to stop showing up for work?
This is her magnum opus, right? This is everything. This is objectivism. This is her ideal man finally realized in John Galt. She's got it all tied up, and she thinks this book is going to change the world.
Because it is so radical, because it basically challenges 2,000 years of philosophy, that really can set some people off.
Everybody practically came out against it. The left, the right, the middle, they were all against it.
It was attacked in the most vicious terms everywhere, and nobody came forth. Nobody.
I said, all due respect to you, Ayn. If John Galt says goodbye to America, 60 pages in your book. I will never give you script approval because I can't get the movie made. If I have to wait till you f***ing drop dead, I will, to do it the right way.
Every time things got worse in Atlas Shrugged, they said, well, we need a new rule. We need a new directive. It's like reading the book.
Did you know that 50,000 regulations were added during the Bush administration? The Bush administration.
First they tell us, you know, I'm in charge of the committee that is setting rules that could, if you make bad rules, could destroy your industry. And then, you know, as they're walking out the door, they'd say, oh, by the way, how much money do you think you could raise for us?
And that's the story of Atlas Shrugged. What happens when the looting runs dry?
I'm challenging the moral code of altruism, the precept that man's moral duty is to live for others, that man must sacrifice himself to others, which is the present-day morality.
All right. Did you get the picture? What would happen if the producers of this in this great nation decided that they were going to quit? That we've had enough. What would happen if Bill Gates, Donald Trump, Warren Buffett all said enough? I mean, you've got people out there like Will Smith, a lot of other rich folks, most barely educated. Oh, yeah, great actors, great performers. Making a ton of money saying that they don't mind paying a little extra in taxes. Then damn, go ahead. Hell, give the government half your shit. I don't care. But I shouldn't be forced to. If you don't mind paying a little bit more in taxes, then by all means do. If you don't mind giving away half your stuff, then go right ahead and do so. We've become a nation of whiners, a nation of candy asses, and a nation of moochers. Where's mine? What's in it for me? I want something. For nothing. What happened to this country? What happened to us? The Obama administration during Obama's Osawatomie, Kansas speech, he so much as said that capitalism doesn't work. Capitalism doesn't work. Make no mistake about this, folks. When Obama says the old ways don't work anymore, he's saying that capitalism no longer works, that we've got to try something different. When Obama says that conservatives, Republicans want you to fend for yourselves, and that nobody got anywhere in this country without the assistance of the government, he's saying that capitalism is dead and that we should embrace the reliance on the government for our health, our well-being, our safety, our security. Massive spending. Who here, within the sound of my voice, thinks that spending more money than you take in is a good idea? And all Obama can say is that those millionaires and billionaires should be paying more in taxes. Pay their fair share. He only wants what's fair. Is it fair? Let me ask you this. Is it fair that 49.5% of all Americans pay no taxes? Every American should pay some form of tax. And I'm not talking about when you get your paycheck, you see that a certain amount has been taken out in taxes. But at the end of the year, when you file your taxes, and especially if you're especially creative, you get a nice refund. Not only do you get all of that money back that you put in, but you get in a little bit more if you write off a few things here and there. That's not paying taxes. Business owners, creative people like myself, and many others, we pay taxes. I pay money to the government quarterly, from my quarterly earnings to the tax man. I get to write off certain things so that I pay less taxes. But at the end of the year, I get no refund. I pay 38% of my earnings in federal taxes, business taxes to the government. I get no refund at the end of the year. Obama's saying that he wants me to pay more because it's only fair that I work 30 years as a United States Marine, risked my life dozens of times, left the Marine Corps after a great career, started my own business, used my own money to do it, didn't get any money from the government, didn't get any loans from the bank. Started my own business. My business has been highly successful. And because of all my risk-taking and hard work, I'm being told that it's not fair that I'm not paying more to give to someone who's done nothing. What's fair about that? We have a call on the line. Oops, lost my caller. Caller, call back when you have a few minutes, and you know, we'll get you on. I'm sorry, I missed you. All right, so is it fair? Socialism. Now, there are those who will say that, well, America has been a socialist country for a long time. Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, all those things. Liberty, folks. Liberty. Liberty means responsibility. George Bernard Shaw once wrote, quote, "That is why most men dread it. Most men, perhaps, but surely not Americans. Liberty is responsibility. That is why most men dread it." Folks, for a long time, I lived in ignorance. Oh, yeah, I'll admit it. I have friends, family, whom I thought were rational and sometimes deep thinkers, people who love this country. I thought that I was surrounded, that I surrounded myself with people who had a deep respect for this great nation. But are you like me? When Obama came into office, you realized that the people around you didn't love America? Are you like me? Did you discover that half of your family are socialist? Some were even Marxist? Did you discover, like me, that most of your family's a bunch of damn racist? Want something for nothing? Vote for a man solely because of the color of his skin and the fact that he wears a nice suit and got a nice smile? Most of my family and most of my friends have no idea what Obama's policies are. They just like the fact that he's black, or, as they say, African-American. Hell, they don't know a damn thing about him. Caller, you're on with the C. Robert Jones Situation Report.
How you doing, sir? This is Bob.
Bob, is that you?
It's me, the big troublemaker of BTR, I guess.
First time I ever heard your voice. How you doing, Guy?
I'm doing good, man. It's a pleasure. Thanks for taking my call, man.
You're welcome. You're welcome. I haven't seen you around in a while. Where you been?
Just, you know, trying to survive this Obama economy like everybody else.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. No doubt. What do you want to talk about, Bob?
Well, you know, you mentioned about some of them billionaires and stuff, saying, you know, capitalism is bad and all this other garbage, which I always find interesting. You get people like George Soros, Oprah Winfrey, Jane Fonda, Ted Turner, Michael Moore, all those Hollywood actors like Sean Penn, people like that, Al Gore, et cetera, et cetera. They're all filthy rich, some multimillionaires, some even multi-billionaires. They all want, you know, this more left-leaning, at the very least, if not more socialist, country, you know, our country to be more socialist. Yet nobody ever mentions they all got filthy rich in America using the capitalism model of economics, not socialist economic model. And therefore, just logically speaking, wouldn't they be walking proof that capitalism works?
Well, that's exactly right. They are. The thing is, for example, let's take Sean Penn, who I really liked as an actor early on. He is a very wealthy man. He's got his wealth. He's able to travel to hang out with Hugo Chavez. He's got villas in Rome and Italy. He's living large.
Yes,
he is.
Hanging out
with Castro and all those guys. How does he? He's made his money, millions of dollars as an actor throughout the last, 25, 30 years?
Mm-hmm.
He's living large through capitalism. But
capitalism.
He would like to see this capitalism system, this capitalist system overthrown. Then if that's the case, what is he going to do? His money's all gone.
But one thing I've learned, man, I've actually been studying these people, man, for a good while now. I never used to think in political terms until like maybe the last probably 10 years or so. Probably, I guess, on the onset of the Iraq war, and I saw like how liberals were trying to undermine, you know, troops over in Iraq. And I really started studying this, and it's a deep study in psychology with these people, man, and it's like one common thread through all of them. Above all else, in my opinion, I believe above all else, they're hypocrites.
Yeah.
They want to keep that money that they've earned, but they want to impose socialism on us.
Well, you're exactly right. Jesse Waters, an investigative reporter for Bill O'Reilly's show, went and visited. He visited with several billionaires, entrepreneurs, who visited the White House recently, and he asked them, you know, are you willing to pay more in taxes? And they said, of course, they believe that it's okay to pay more in taxes. They'd be willing to do that. And so Jesse Waters said to them, well, would you be willing to, you know, when your tax returns are in, just contribute more of your own personal funds, you know, for the sake of the government so that the government could take the money and use it? They said they hemmed and hawed, a couple of them hemmed and hawed for a couple of minutes and then said no. They don't want to give any of their personal money away. They will only pay more taxes if everybody does.
Right.
You know, but they're not going to give any of their jack away to the government.
Right.
And I thought it was extremely telling, you know, that you know, these folks are hypocrites, as you said. You know, they don't want to, you know, they don't want you to have any of their stuff. But, you know, if everybody does it, they'll kick in a little. You know, it's amazing.
What I found also another, like, you just, you know, along those same lines, that they claim to be the more feeling, more heartfelt, you know, sensitive to everybody else, you know, to more tolerant people and more caring people than, say, conservatives are. We're supposed to be these racists and intolerant and hardened you know, mean people. Yet it's a known fact that conservatives give more to charities than liberals do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I do. And there was a study recently done that proves that, there are more rich Democrats in the House and Senate than there are rich Republicans in the House and Senate. And that and the majority of those rich Democrats in the House and Senate pay very little in taxes. And a lot of them are still holdovers from the mid, the late 80s, when there was a House banking scandal where most of the House of Representatives on the Democrat side were writing bad checks to the House.
Right.
They were just writing a check and they were getting money and the checks would bounce, but nothing would happen. So they just had their own like free teller machine at the House bank. Now that House banking deal is closed down because of the scandal that occurred. I don't know if anybody remembers that, but I sure do.
I remember that. They were bouncing checks, and if we do that, we get charged by our banks, and the person we wrote the check to, their banks charges a fee too.
And in some cases, folks go to jail, Bob.
Right, exactly. That's you're stealing. It's check kiting. You're stealing
mm-hmm.
money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's a crime, like you say. You know. Another thing, about like 4 years ago, I'd say, I noticed that I think the top five out of six, I think, richest people in Congress were Democrats. One was John Kerry,
mm-hmm.
Lee Rockefeller, who else? Oh, Kohl's, who owns those stores, Kohl's stores, and I can't remember the other guys. And,
yeah.
It was either five out of the top six or five out of the top seven were Democrats, but yet they're supposed – they always paint themselves as the ones that are – in touch with, you know, how the little guy feels, how the poor man, you know, they care about the poor man, and they can relate to the poor man. But yet you're filthy rich. You're a liar. You know?
Yeah, exactly. You're exactly right. It's amazing that we live in a country where, you know, we've been taught that we live in the richest country in the world. Yeah, and, you know, the most enterprising country, the streets were paved with gold, all that stuff. And it's a great place to live and work and live a great life. But I think some people have taken that the wrong way. They've taken that to mean that we're such a rich and powerful country that those riches should be spread around. Those riches should be used so to benefit everybody. So that when everybody's rich, nobody is. I think what liberals really want is for us to all be poor, because they have a not only they have a sense of entitlement, but they have an inferiority complex. Anybody who is rich, powerful, successful, to a liberal, even if that liberal is also rich, powerful, and successful, is a threat. They would love for a rich Republican. They would love for a man like Donald Trump, or any other wealthy Republican to give half of their earnings to the government while they keep theirs. Because if you're a Republican and you're wealthy, then somehow that means that you've earned your money wrongfully, that you've earned your money through some shady shenanigans, that you've earned your money by exploiting someone else. While rich Democrats, well, they earn their money in a much more fruitful and positive way. And it's all good.
Right, yeah. like John Kerry marrying two super rich women. That's how he got his money. And it, but you know what? That whole thing of that demonizing the wealthy, the rich people as well. Obviously, they don't demonize George Soros or anybody that's going to help their cause. That's fine. I even heard liberals telling the whole Al Gore global warming thing.
Mm-hmm.
I brought up the point. Well. You know, you guys are sitting there bashing the rich, and you're talking about global warming. Did you know that Al Gore, uses 10 times the amount of the normal, whatever the number was, I think 10 or 20 times the amount of electricity that a normal home uses, and he's made $100 million in the last 10 years peddling global warming, but yet, you know, you guys aren't bashing him, and they're like, oh, well, he uses that money to teach people about global warming, so it's okay. You
mm-hmm.
know what I mean? So it's like, I mean, they just want a complete double standard, and it's pure hypocrisy. And I'm like, well, you know what? As far as, like, people being rich in America, that is the American dream, and you should be happy. Like all those left wingers I mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. I'm not jealous. I don't like what they do with their money. I totally disagree with what they do, what their ideology is, because I think it's evil. But I'm not jealous of their money, because they've proven, like we said before, that capitalism works in America, and it also means that possibly one day I might be able to get rich, you know, and it proves that accomplishing the American dream is actually possible. And the way they should look at it is that they could possibly do this as well for themselves. Instead of having this petty jealousy thing that they have happening about it, they need to, be glad that they can be in America and possibly be allowed to be successful here. Whereas none of those people would have ever accomplished that in Cuba or pick a Marxist country, they would have never been able to accomplish that in any of those countries.
Let me ask you this, Bob. Have you found that shortly after Obama became president of the United States, that a few of your friends, maybe even some family members, have come out of the woodwork as being uber liberal and socialist or Marxist like me? Have you friends maybe?
I live near you. I'm in Maryland, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And as you know, I'm sure you know, Maryland is a messed up place right now. It's 67% registered Democrat. So they've kind of like – they've been used to having that supermajority, where they can basically run roughshod in the Maryland state legislature. They're doing all kinds of crazy stuff as we speak right now. And they've gotten very used to that. The Democrat machine here is very powerful. They never have any challenges. It's actually a miracle that Bob Ehrlich ever got elected in my book,
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
So they've gotten very used to that. So they, from what I've seen here in Maryland, they've always kind of been open about it. And but I have noticed other places what you're talking about. They've gotten emboldened by the Marxist in the White House being mm-hmm. elected to the White House. And now it's not like so much behind the curtain where you can't see what they're doing, how they're operating in the dark and stuff while we're, going about our business. So they have, like you say, they have gotten more emboldened about it. But that's a good thing, because now the targets are out in the open.
No doubt. No doubt. We're up against the clock. Bob, thank you for calling in. I finally get to hear your voice. I'm glad you called in. Hey, 2020 is coming up next on the 2020 Radio Network with G-Ski Rock. So, hey, you should probably get over there, Bob, because I'm headed that way. Everybody else who's listening to my show, head on over to G-Ski Rocks with my man G-Ski, 2020 Radio. Thanks a lot, Bob, and I appreciate the call, man. You made the show. I do appreciate it, guy. And hopefully you'll call in again sometime. You're welcome, man. All right. All right. That was Bob USMC, a fellow Marine, a great warrior, and a good blog talk friend. We're out of here. God bless you. God bless the United States of America. We are out. Thank you for listening.